station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-800-24-LIBERTY. Pardon me, at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being because we have with us on the line Dr. Joel Kaufman. And Dr. Kaufman has a degree in pharmacy, has a degree in organic chemistry. And like most people, he just went right along with everything. The system, until one day he began looking into some of the claims of some of these crazy doctors in alternative medicine, Dr. Whitaker, certainly William Campbell Douglas and others, and then he began to look up their medical references, and as absurd as they seemed, like the fact that taking an aspirin a day really doesn't do you any good, the fact that fluoridated water is toxic and poisons every aspect of your body, the whole scam of statin drugs are simply a scam, and on and on. And eventually he wrote a book entitled Malignant Medical Myths, Why Medical Treatment Causes 200,000 Deaths in the USA Every Year, and How to Protect Yourself. Dr. Kaufman, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, of course, it must have come as quite a shock when you began actually looking at these reports and realizing that the doctors you know and trust, and doctors are good people as a whole. You know, I practiced medicine for many years, and I love the medical profession, and I love doctors, but a lot of them really don't ever read these reports. They depend upon the detailed men and the detailed women, and the summaries or the abstracts of the papers that have been slanted, you know, because they've simply bought off the people who put those out to influence doctors into prescribing medicines that really don't do any good. Would you like to pick up the story?
Yes. One of the first myths that I really looked into was that taking an aspirin per day for a very long time to prevent a first heart attack, and was amazed to find that when we heard these tales, take an aspirin per day, and in the physician's health study reported in 1989-1990, the 56% drop, and there are other figures, in heart attacks were all non-fatal heart attacks, and that there was no increase in lifespan on the whole. That was quite a shock. Other things that have come up since that are not even in the book are equally upsetting, that taking bone loss preventive drugs such as Fosamax and the others will increase bone density when a scan is redone after one has been taking these drugs for a while. But in John Abramson's book, Overdosed America, he makes it quite clear that there is no reduction in the number of bone fractures, even with increased density.
Yeah, and of course now they're finding they're getting the osteonecrosis of the jawbone along with that.
Yeah, that's true. I just heard about that also.
And so many of these drugs really can get you into a lot of problems. And even though, of course, they sound really wonderful, if you don't reduce the number of fractures, you know, what the women are getting, postmenopausal women, is it really worthwhile taking this very expensive and potentially dangerous drug?
It certainly is not. And of other recent news to come in, thanks to friends and members of the International Cholesterol Skeptics, and others.
I'm going to ask if you'll just hold that thought for a moment, because we're going to bring some of the other stations on board, and we're going to lose a few stations here for a couple of minutes, and then we'll all be back together right here at Radio Liberty with Dr. Joel Kaufman. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and our guest is Dr. Kaufman, and we're talking about his book, The Malignant Myths. And Dr. Kaufman has a degree in pharmacy. He has a degree in biochemistry. He's done a lot of drug research through the years. And did you write this book after you had retired? How was it that you actually came to write the book?
It's true that I felt somewhat safe after retiring. I didn't have to worry about working at a college of pharmacy and contradicting what their main mission was, to help people take more drugs in the sincere belief that they would be better off by doing so. But so far, there have been very few complaints from that direction and some interest in what has been turned up.
Well, I think that most doctors and most scientists really want to get to the truth. But, you know, it's so easy, for instance, when they give you the relative figures on, you know, on what a wonderful thing it is to take these statin drugs, and, of course, why you're going to live so much longer if you simply take the statin drugs and get your cholesterol down. And how many times have people in the listening audience seen those? The man on the blue stairs, going down the stairs, and each stair is a lower cholesterol. And now, of course, they have a new Crestor ad there. And just ask your doctor about Crestor, because this really gets your cholesterol down. And I want you to know it does. But it's not going to prolong your life. That's the thing. In fact, if you read what Crestor actually says in their little fine print, it says that this is not going to either prevent cardiac morbidity or cardiac mortality. And they figure you won't know what those words really mean. But tell us about these statin drugs, this greatest of all scam being put over on the American people, where millions of Americans are taking a drug that really doesn't do much of any good.
Well, what can I tell you? The whole cholesterol myth was brought out in a book that came out in 2000 by Uffe Ravenskov called The Cholesterol Myths. A week ago, I received a book called The Great Cholesterol Con by Anthony Colpo of Australia. And a number of people have been catching on to the idea that higher than average cholesterol levels in the serum, or higher than average LDL cholesterol levels in the serum, are actually good for you and not bad for you. It's incontrovertibly found in the medical literature that people with the highest cholesterol levels live the longest, and those with the highest LDL levels live the longest.
And I think that is such an important fact that even your doctor doesn't know this. We'll be back here in just a moment with Dr. Kaufman. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and Dr. Joel Kaufman was talking about the fact that those with the higher cholesterol levels live longer, and those with certain specific types of high of cholesterol that they keep telling you that you've got to get down live longer. So why don't you just repeat that fact for the people who just come on board with us, would you please?
Yes, the literature is clear that in women, cholesterol levels go up throughout life, and women with the highest cholesterol levels live the longest. In men, cholesterol levels go up to about age 55, and then stabilize or drop a little through age 65, perhaps, and that's when men have their heart attacks, if they're going to have them at that young an age, and then cholesterol levels go up in men. Men with the same cholesterol and LDL levels as women of the same age will live just as long.
And, of course, this idea that we're going to save your life, if you don't get your cholesterol down, you're going to die. Is that really true?
No, if I understood you correctly, it's not true. But what is true is the statin drugs have certain other effects, one of them being an aspirin-like effect, where they will help to prevent first heart attacks. They don't seem to do much for second heart attacks, but the statin drugs will actually prevent first heart attacks. But like aspirin, they are mostly non-fatal heart attacks.
And so it's not going to save your life, but it has, it's anti-inflammatory. It's not because your cholesterol is going down, but because these things work like aspirin and non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medications. And it does decrease the first-time heart attacks, but by what percentage? What are we really talking about?
Well, when we are told that heart attacks are reduced in a big clinical trial, double-blind, placebo-controlled clinical trial, when heart attacks are reduced by 30%, the people involved are young enough so that the absolute percentage reduction is typically a third of a percent per year.
That's a third of a percent a year. So basically what they're doing is they're rigging those figures, aren't they, and using relative rather than absolute figures?
Yeah, seemingly in the 1970s it became the norm to use relative risk rather than absolute risk. And for listeners who are a little less than certain about this, if you were told that you had a 2 in a million chance of something happening to you unless you took some treatment, and that the treatment would reduce your chances of having this problem by 50%, you might be tempted to do it, hearing that 50%, but that would reduce your chances from 2 in a million to 1 in a million. Who would bother?
And you know, I hate to laugh at this, but this is the sort of a scam that they're using. And there is billions and billions of dollars of profit being made by the drug companies, each one coming out with a better statin drug. But aren't there complications from the statin drugs? What do they do to things like CoQ10? What do they do to the fertility of the people who take these? And what are the other complications of these drugs? Because they're not entirely without complications, are they?
No, they are certainly not. The typical mild things that happen with statin drugs are muscle pain and muscle weakness and forgetfulness that is typically put down to old age, because people mostly over 55 are the ones who will be prescribed them. In the worst cases, there is a muscle breakdown that leads to kidney failure, which can be fatal, but admittedly it's rare. And there are cases of total amnesia, which will not resolve until the drug is stopped and some time goes by.
And that's because, of course, they lower the cholesterol, and the brain is primarily made up of cholesterol and other fats.
And nerve junctions involve cholesterol as one of the key molecules present at every synapse to transmit the impulse. We all knew about acetylcholine at these places, right? Well, cholesterol was relatively recently found to be just as essential at a synapse as that in order to transmit a signal.
And, of course, it does also lower the coenzyme Q10, doesn't it? And isn't that a very, very important coenzyme as far as the physiological function of our body?
Yes, the coenzyme Q10 is responsible for transmitting the oxygen carried by the blood into a certain part of the cell where it actually makes ATP, the energy molecule, out of ADP. So it is essential, and low coenzyme Q10 levels lead to muscle weakness, tiredness, and congestive heart failure.
All right, fine. And then, of course, you know, so many of the people I've talked to have been on the statin drugs. They have a lot of muscle aches and pains as a byproduct of this, don't they?
Yes, it is the norm. And the percent of people taking statin drugs who suffer adverse effects is normally said to be a few percent, or 1 or 2% by the drug manufacturers. However, in papers in the Journal of the American Medical Association and New England Journal of Medicine, there are papers crying and howling about the number of people taking these drugs who have stopped taking them. And the only reason could be because of side effects, because the propaganda that the drugs are actually useful is so powerful. It's seen on television every night. In magazines, whole magazine articles have been written as though they're ads for statin drugs. In magazines like Time or U.S. News and World Report, though I don't want to accuse one of these falsely. And why would people stop taking these drugs if their insurance is paying for them in particular and they're paying only a copay? In most cases, the financial burden is not the reason. The reason is side effects. So these journal articles cry and moan that after 1 year, 50% of all people prescribed these drugs stopped taking them, and by the end of the second year, 75% have stopped taking them. And so the true rate of side effects must be 75%.
Well, now, of course, why do doctors prescribe these drugs? Certainly doctors are not bad people. They're trying to help their patients. So why are there so many doctors? You know, they look at that cholesterol figure and they say, well, we've got to get your cholesterol down or you're going to have a heart attack.
Well, there's no relation in people of the same age and sex between cholesterol levels and the likelihood of a heart attack, and there's really no relation, and never has been, between LDL cholesterol levels and the likelihood of a heart attack in people of the same age and sex. Now, if a 30-year-old suddenly started started to run total cholesterols of 350 milligrams per deciliter, that would mean that that person is a victim of early stage cancer, infection, or inflammation, and the body is jacking up the cholesterol level to fight it, and that's what ought to be fought, not to bring down the high cholesterol level directly.
And so the cholesterol level is being raised by the liver to actually combat this illness, whatever it may be. And then, of course, you take the statin drugs, and they poison the liver and get the cholesterol down and defeat the purpose of the, you know, that is the body's function to fight the problem.
Now, some people in the International Cholesterol Skeptics Group, which is thincs.org.
Oh, I'm sorry. What is that again?
thincs.org. Some people say that the reason many people who stick with their statin drugs do so well is that they were the ones with the highest cholesterol levels to start with, and they were therefore the healthiest members of the population to start with. And so they do pretty well despite the drugs because they were in better shape to start with because of their high cholesterol levels. These would be older people in which high cholesterol is the norm.
And, of course, this is what the average person doesn't know. And the trouble is your doctor doesn't know it because he's looking at the relative figures. And he doesn't understand that if it's between the absolute and the relative figures. Is there any place that people can get that? Do you have a website or any place where you explain that? Or will they find that in your book?
Malignant Medical Myths goes into the difference between relative and absolute percent changes in things in the introduction. Uffe Ravenscove's book, The Cholesterol Myth, does that throughout the book. The book, The Great Cholesterol Con, does that. And I hate to slight others, but others have caught on to this and have also explained the relative versus absolute amounts. So that 56% reduction in non-fatal heart attacks in U.S. male physicians from taking baby aspirin actually amounts to 0.11% per year fewer non-fatal heart attacks. That's all.
And the average physician really doesn't know that. And so, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to have to get educated, and you're going to have to educate your doctor, and maybe we can get him on our side. I'm sure once he understands what's going on, he will be with us 100% when he realizes he's been taken advantage of. Now, one of the things that's really so fascinating is you go into, you know, the problem with water fluoridation. Now, everybody knows that water fluoridation is safe and effective, and that's why we have so many fewer, you know, dental caries in children, and one of the great public health triumphs, a 50-year program that dramatically increased the dental health of our people. Is that true?
No.
Well, would you explain to our listeners why that isn't true?
Well, I'm not sure what type of explanation is wanted, but when people who are not employed by the fluoride production industries who wanted to get rid of the material look at the data, benefits are really not seen. There are no benefits for adult teeth, and the benefit for deciduous teeth is statistically significant barely only for 5-year-olds and not even that for 6-year-olds, and by the time you reach 7-year-olds there are not fewer cavities. But here again we have something that's like drug side effects. Even if there were fewer cavities, the tendency of fluoride to make teeth more brittle and fail by cracking is worse than having cavities. It happened to me.
Oh, hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Dr. Joe Kaufman. And these things are so important, ladies and gentlemen. You got to understand that they're poisoning our children with fluoride. Well, Dr. Kaufman, why don't you pick this story up? You were talking about how, of course, the fluoride makes the teeth more brittle, and I know that's happened to me as well. And, of course, I've got a couple of cap teeth because they cracked, but that's been some time ago. But why don't you just get into the background of why water fluoridation is not safe and effective?
Because fluoride is toxic. This was really known. One of the things it does is depress thyroid gland function, And a lot of things, including obesity, can be blamed on underactive thyroid glands. It does make skeletal bones, in addition to teeth, more brittle and prone to fractures. And at least one study in Utah, using nearby towns in Utah, showed that in the very elderly, hip fractures were two or three times as likely in the town with fluoridated water as in the town without fluoridated water. A study done in New Jersey by its own health department person, Perry Cohn, found that boys were several times as likely to get bone cancer in the parts of New Jersey with fluoridated water compared with those without.
All right, fine. And, Chris, it has an effect on so many things. As you get it all into the fertility, its effect on fertility, its effect on the thyroid, the endocrine system, American girls, things of that sort.
Some of the things you just mentioned I am not familiar with, even after studying that issue for a year.
All right, fine. Well, I'd be glad to send you the references on that. But we actually put together a syllabus with so many of the articles out of the journal Fluoride. And, of course, it has an effect on sperm motility and the sperm counts in men in areas with fluoride, in the water. No, did you run into that at all?
No, I did not.
All right. Well, I will be glad to send you a copy of my syllabus. It has all those articles in it. All right. Are there any other specific things about water fluoridation that the people should know, other than the fact that it really doesn't do much good as far as the dental health? And then why is it that the dentists are so sold on this? And I know my dental friends tell me it must work because dental health is so much better than it was 30 or 40 years ago.
Well, to digress a little bit, beer made with fluoridated water is fluoridated. And it really pays to get beer made in a country that is pretty much non-fluoridated. And which countries they are can be found in my book and many other places. So that's an aside that I thought I had to throw in.
All right, you go right ahead. What other points do you make in your book?
About other topics, you mean.
All right. Is there anything else we should cover about water fluoridation, do you think?
Japan was forced to have it by the United States when we occupied Japan. When they looked at the results and saw no benefit from it, a few years after the U.S. stopped the occupation, the fluoridation in Japan was stopped. Maybe that's why the Japanese are the longest live numerous people in the world. Maybe. One reason.
All right, fine. Certainly, we know that almost all of Europe doesn't fluoridate their water.
Except Ireland,
right.
All other European countries considered it. There are a few odd spots here and there that still fluoridate, single cities here and there, but the United Kingdom is 10% fluoridated. That's the highest in Europe.
Now, hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with Dr. Joe Kaufman. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Dr. Joe Kaufman. We're talking about his book on malignant medical myths, and he simply pointed out that if you look at the statistics on water fluoridation, 5-year-old children maybe have a little bit better dental health than comparable children from non-fluoridated areas, but by the time you get to 6 or 7, it doesn't really make any difference, and there are so many complications, and he really, of course, lists many of these in his book, Malignant Myths. So what are some of the other issues we should talk about, some of the other malignant myths that the people need to know about?
The overuse of blood pressure drugs. Blood pressure rises with age, just like cholesterol. And unless one's blood pressure is in the top 10% for your age and sex, taking blood pressure drugs, while it will lower the blood pressure, will not make you live longer, and they too have severe side effects. A side effect of these ACE inhibitors that have been around for 20 years is causing birth defects. If pregnant women take an ACE inhibitor, birth defects in any trimester. The last paper on that came out just 2 weeks ago in the New England Journal of Medicine. Other blood pressure drugs actually cause diabetes, or at least they cause elevated blood glucose levels. So some of the side effects are nightmarish and never mentioned. The initial trial of the earliest modern blood pressure drugs, the beta blockers, I think, was a Veterans Administration trial, and the people involved had really, really high blood pressures that were probably in the top 5% for the age and sex, like 220 over 110, and they benefited. And in some studies where blood pressures are really, really high like that, there is a benefit. But the benefit is on the order of 1% fewer deaths per year and 1.5% fewer strokes per year. So it's not a giant benefit, but it is worthwhile if your blood pressure is really, really high. Otherwise, not.
And yet I know very well that when I went to my very good friend of mine, is a cardiologist, and my blood pressure was 160 over 90, and it's been there for, well, since I was 24 years old, and here I was about 75, and I thought that was a pretty good blood pressure considering my age, and oh no, they had to get me on these blood pressure pills. But I read what it said in the on the enclosure, and after reading that, I would, no way was I going to take blood pressure pills, because the cost, the benefit, you know, certainly was nowhere near the danger, because you start getting hypotension and your blood pressure falls, why, you can get into all sorts of problems.
Accidents, falls, and the elderly, a fall due to postural hypotension from taking a beta blocker and maybe other types of blood pressure drugs, can lead to a broken hip. And the prognosis for broken hips in the elderly is not that great.
Well, and of course, I used to take care of a lot of them because I was an orthopedic surgeon, and certainly the one thing you certainly wanted to do was get those people up and around as soon as you can. And but blood pressure medication, I think, is overused. It used to be, we said, your blood pressure should be 100 plus your age. So if you were 70 years old, 170 was fine. But my cardiologist said, oh, well, that's all old-fashioned. We know that if we've got to get your blood pressure down to 120, well, I didn't take the medication. I'm still going strong.
Good. Well, the story here has to do with the difference in age. If someone at a younger age began running higher than normal blood pressures, one should go look for a specific reason, and if nothing can be found, maybe blood pressure drug would be reasonable for that 30-year-old who was running 170 over 95, maybe. What people should be asking, instead of just accepting the implication that if you take a blood pressure drug, you have to live longer, what they should be asking is, how much longer? And in some of the trials, it was 2 months. Another trial, it was 4 months. It's not a great amount. And these gold standard double-blind trials can be rigged in some interesting ways. There is a break-in period for many kinds of drugs, not just blood pressure drugs. There is a run-in period where a whole bunch of people who have been selected to potentially participate in the real trial are given the drug or some other treatment for a period of a few weeks or a few months, and the ones who respond really badly are out. And so all the ones who would make trouble for the drug manufacturer by responding badly are out before the real trial is then carried out, which then makes the drug look better than it's going to look in widespread use.
And so they're really more concerned about how the drug looks than really how it acts. Because, I mean, if you can get one of these drugs actually approved by the FDA, why, you're talking about hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars profit, and you hate to say that because it sounds so crash. Unfortunately, it's true. You're going to be back in just a moment with Dr. Joe Kaufman. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Dr. Joe Kaufman. We're talking about his book entitled Malignant Medical Myths, Why Medical Treatment Causes 200,000 Deaths in the USA Each Year and How to Protect Yourself. Well, is there anything else you want to cover with blood pressure, or should we get to the myth about a drink a day keeps the doctor away?
Let's do that.
All right, fine. So tell us about that. Now, does a drink a day seem to make us more healthy or not?
All the earlier studies implied that it did by giving the effect on heart death, which could be a heart attack from a blocked coronary artery, or congestive heart failure, or sudden cardiac death after an arrhythmia, three major types of heart deaths. And the benefits of alcohol in any form in most of the early studies were given for just this one thing. But a major point made in malignant medical myths is that unless you have all-cause mortality, death from any cause, related to the treatment, you have nothing. Because if heart deaths are prevented, you have to die of something. If the treatment, drug or otherwise, increases cancer rates, well, what would you rather die of?
Well, it's not a very good choice, is it?
No.
All right.
So the really good studies, long-term with 25-year follow-ups, that turned up, and there aren't many of them, one from the United Kingdom and one from Sweden, did not turn up any overall benefits in all-cause mortality from drinking more than two drinks per day for a male and one drink per day for a female. Heart deaths were fewer, other deaths were greater, and the overall benefit was very small and not worth the expense of drinking the alcohol.
Now, what about the wine, the red wine, the idea of drinking red wine or getting resveratrol? What are your thoughts on that?
I wish I knew. The antioxidant theory of fighting free radicals is actually controversial itself. It has fairly widespread acceptance, but it's not total. And the famous study in the journal Clinical Chemistry, 1995, in which people were asked to drink white wine, red wine, grape juice, or take a vitamin C, the study lasted only a few hours because the antioxidant capability of blood samples was measured after an hour, 2 hours, 4 hours.
Hold that thought, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were just talking with Dr. Kaufman about this idea of taking a drink a day or a couple of drinks a day would make you live longer, and it's his feeling that this is not conclusive. Then I was asking him about red wine. I know my grandfather had a chronic lymphatic leukemia, and he started making his own red wine, and he outlived most of his doctors, even though he'd had this leukemia for so many years, and he always attributed it to the red wine. And Dr. Kaufman is saying the studies are not conclusive. Would that be a fair statement?
That's a fair statement. The study that I was telling you about, which I think is the one that got the red wine antioxidants into the news in 1995 in the journal Clinical Chemistry, did show that red wine had more gave human blood in volunteers more antioxidant ability than white wine or grape juice, but whoever ran the test was very smart, and the volunteers who took vitamin C as part of the trial beat the pants off the red wine with the antioxidant power of their blood after vitamin C. So it's a modest amount of vitamin C. I don't remember how much, although it's probably in my book. So it's not there. It's really not there.
All right. Well, let's get into vitamin C. Do you think that vitamin C or significant doses of vitamin C is beneficial?
That's a good question.
I know. That's why I'm
not having a trial pop into my head that did comparative lifespans offhand of people who didn't take it and people who did take it. I think I've noted trials somewhere in my book where there is a benefit for some specific condition.
All right, fine. Well, now one of the myths is low carbohydrate diets are unsafe and ineffective for losing weight. In other words, don't eat a low carbohydrate diet. So what's your response to that?
Well, that's the myth, of course. going along with the whole cholesterol nonsense, which started around 1908, was the idea that eating a lot of fat, especially saturated fat from any source, animal or vegetable, as long as it was saturated, that really got going in the 1950s because of an MD named Ansel Keys, who I think was with University of Minnesota Medical School, and he really promoted that, and some of us are not sure why he got started on that. But the Ansel Keys story is told very well in the book called The Great Cholesterol Con, much better than in my book. And he actually did a study that was kind of fraudulent. He tried to calculate the amount of saturated fat that people ate in several countries, like six and then seven, and show that the prevalence of heart deaths went up when the amount of saturated fat went up. Well, the first problem with his work is he found the amount of saturated fat available to be eaten, but as this was an epidemiological type study and not a real trial, one cannot say how much was actually eaten or trimmed off meat and thrown away. That's the first problem. The second problem was he picked the six or seven countries to agree with his preconceived notion. There was information available on 14 or 16 other countries, and when those results were plotted on a graph, it looked like a shotgun blast. There was no correlation. On top of this, in two countries, Italy and Finland, the incidence of heart problems varied by a factor of five, depending on where you were within that country. So that was another myth that got going. And people were told that if you eat fat, you'll get fat, and if you eat saturated fat, you will have a heart attack due to a blocked coronary artery. None of this was true. None of this has been seen in real observational trials.
All right, well, that gets us to another thing, and that is this whole idea of chelation. And there are a lot of doctors who are perhaps not in the mainstream who are offering chelation, and of course, most mainstream doctors sort of scoff at that idea that you can do anything at all to, change the course of arteriosclerosis or coronary artery disease by chelation therapy. And yet I know so many people who've been chelated, and I know doctors who've done it who swear by it. In fact, I had one very good friend who practiced alternative medicine, and he told me they even had a professor of cardiology who was in their little group, and he used to make all of his money by doing coronary bypass operations. And when he found out that many of his patients did so well on chelation, he had to give up, in good conscience, the coronary bypass. Is there any value in chelation?
Yes, it really has value. Takes a while to see the value. A typical course of chelation is one per week for 20 weeks, and then you come back a year after the start and do it again, and then see what's happening, have Doppler ultrasound measurement of blood flow, especially in the ankle, see whether that has improved, and frequently it does, but not always. And it really works. The book on this, the textbook on chelation therapy, lists that 44% of people having chelation in published trials benefit a lot, another 44% benefit a little, the remaining 12% have no benefit or a negative effect. So it's overwhelmingly effective. The mainstream has fought this tooth and nail and has actually designed trials that are rigged to show that chelation is not effective.
And, this is one of the big problems today, that there is an organized effort to discourage some effective treatments by rigging trials. And they've done this for years, and then they publish it, and they say, see, it doesn't work at all. And then they start to demonize the doctors who are doing it. It's almost as if they don't want people to get better.
Yes, or perhaps more money can be made by doing something other than chelation. Around here, it's about $120 per treatment, which is a week. You have to do 20 of them. Medical insurance typically will not pay, but it always pays to ask your insurer to pay for it. Once in a while, it happens. So the cost of the 20 treatments is how much? $2,500 altogether,
right,
roughly? How does this compare in cost, then, with a bypass operation, which at the University of Pennsylvania can run $75,000? That's nearby, so I named that one. Not always that high, but there's no comparison.
Absolutely not. And so rather than do the $2,500 treatment, why we recommend the CABG, which, of course, is a $50,000 to $75,000, it doesn't make sense, and you have to ask yourself, why is this really going on? I don't think it's necessarily because the surgeons... Yeah, I think most of them are honest people. I think if they really knew the truth, but they're not getting the truth, then somebody is rigging these trials. Well, before we go on, do you have a web page or any information you'd like to get out about your work where people could get more information of what you're talking about?
Some of my work is listed on the International Cholesterol Skeptics site mentioned earlier, thincs.org, and I do not have a personal website. And so my publications that have to do with cholesterol, fat, diet, just that, can be found at that site.
All right, fine. Well, because another thing that you're told is, my goodness, you better get to the doctor every year and get your mammogram, because you get your mammogram and it's going to save your life if we can get an early cancer. So what's the real truth?
Well, it seems not to have worked. The most careful studies of the effect of mammograms on lifespan have indicated no additional lifespan, even if cancers are detected early. Part of the problem is that 30 to 40% of what is called cancer is more likely to be a non-spreading growth called DCIS, ductal carcinoma in situ. In situ means it right there and hasn't spread. And so a lot of diagnoses that lead to violent treatment, which lead to all kinds of trauma and all the problems that stress causes, can be caused by diagnoses that have a huge fraction of incorrect opinions. But the another interesting study carried out by Bernard Fisher, University of Pittsburgh Medical School, was on whether high-dose radiation after total mastectomy improved survival rates, and it does not. And yet, everyone I've talked to with breast cancer or the husbands thereof have said that almost every woman in the U.S. who is really diagnosed with breast cancer, whatever is done surgically, it seems invariably they get 6,000 rads of cobalt-60 gamma rays, when it's clear in the literature after a 25-year study, imagine that, that's so rare, do not live any longer.
And of course the thing is that you can't give that amount of radiation without it having an effect on the heart underneath.
It's true. Some of the cancer deaths are converted to heart deaths, and it's in my myth number 9.
Myth number 9. What if you're out there in the listening audience, you'd like to, of course, ask Dr. Kaufman a question. Our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Now, myth number 10 is cancer treatments are better than ever and have a cure rate of 60%. Now, that's really pretty good, isn't it?
Well, if it were a cure rate, it would be excellent, because seemingly it has doubled in 50, 60 years, from 30% to 60%. Unfortunately, it's not a cure rate. It's a 5-year survival rate. And with earlier and earlier detection of cancer, the 5-year survival rates have gone up because of the earlier detection. There's more time between detection and the problems caused by the cancer.
All right, and I think that now, of course, your one of your last points is get the benefits of developing your own case of medical paranoia. And you're suggesting that people should get a little paranoid and really begin questioning things that they're being told?
Yes. If they don't want to antagonize their MDs right off the bat, if they're not sure of something, let them do careful checking when they have gotten back to home or their local library, which is probably going to have a computer if they don't have it at home, and look up things and check some of the better books that are out and see what happens. See what you find. You may find myths that I've never even thought of. Check specific things. That's what you should do. Another thing that people should do for their own benefit is when they have lab tests and x-rays which are interpreted, they should get copies of the lab tests or the x-ray interpretations or other scan interpretations and keep a copy at home for themselves, look at it, see what's within the so-called normal range and what is not, although these are all perverted to be whatever someone with a financial incentive wants them to be. But still, get your records. The one who did your tests may be out of business or conveniently lose them in 3 to 5 years due to a computer change, and then you have no baseline. So whenever you get your next lab test, really get a copy, take it home, and have it available for a reference. If in a later lab test some value seems to be off, but it was equally off on your baseline lab test, don't worry about it.
All right, another point you make is all iodizing radiation is dangerous except when it's given to you by an oncologist radiation therapist.
Well, that's the myth.
Okay. Go ahead, and how would you
approach that's the myth. When we live in a sea of radiation, okay? There's no such thing as having no radiation if you're living on planet Earth, almost any place. Cancer rates are lowest in the states with the highest background radiation and highest in the states with the lowest background radiation, because small amounts of radiation are really beneficial. All life developed on Earth in a sea of radiation. It is thought that 1 billion years ago, the general radiation levels, ionizing radiation, gammas, betas, alphas, was 10 times what it is now.
And I think it's so important to understand that low-dose radiation actually stimulates your immune system and actually helps you to fight off disease. Would that be a fair statement?
Very fair. And one of the diseases it helps to fight is cancer, reducing cancer rates in the best cases, by about 20%. That's cancers in general.
Now, of course, but the corollary to that is certainly high-dose radiation can actually produce cancer.
And does, and sometimes with a very long latency period, so you never know what to blame.
And so there's a difference between high-dose and low-dose radiation, but the scam about, oh, radon in the house, my goodness, you better get your house tested for radon. Actually, they found out that if you live in a house with radon, you'll have a lower incidence of cancer. And I'm sure you're well acquainted with those studies.
Yes, they're mostly Bernard Cullen's, if I have that name correct, University of Pittsburgh Medical School again. And he's done careful epidemiological studies covering most of the U.S. population county by county. And in general, those with the highest radon levels have the lowest cancer levels.
And I've heard Dr. Cohen speak many times, and he's absolutely right. And ladies and gentlemen, you really ought to understand what's going on. There's so many scams out there, and they're frightening to death about all the wrong issues. And the things you really ought to be frightened at, you're not. In fact, you're taking these medications, which are really toxic to you. Well, you know, we're just about out of time. Dr. Kaufman, do you have any thoughts for our listeners? We'll have a few more minutes. So anyway, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Dr. Kaufman, you can give us a call right now at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I think that you would stress the point. You'd probably agree that people are responsible for their own health. You can't turn this over to somebody else. You can't say, you know, I'm here, just cure me. You've got to know what these issues are. You've got to read on the material, and you need to start doing some research. And you had mentioned William Campbell Douglas and Dr. Whitaker. Are there others that you would recommend that getting the books on?
Well, or newsletters of. Well, Fred and Alice Ottoboni, who wrote the book The Modern Nutritional Diseases, which is an extremely good one, have said that it's probably better to put your subscription money toward getting some of the better books that are out there. One of the things that you want to see in a better book is literature references to peer-reviewed literature, and with each reference having a number, that's that academic-looking superscript in the text that leads to the reference in the back. You want to see that, and you want to check some of those references now and then to check an author who's new for you to see whether the author is correctly representing what was in a publication. So you check two or three.
Okay. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Dr. Joel Kaufman, and of course we are talking about Dr. Joel Kaufman, and we're talking about his book, Malignant Medical Myths, and we will make this available to any of our listeners who are interested in getting it. You can just call our 800 number, 1-800-544-8927. The book is also probably available from Amazon and from regular bookstores?
From Amazon, definitely. Regular bookstores will order it if asked.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Regis, who's calling from Pennsylvania. Hi, Regis. You have a quick question?
Yes, I just I heard just a few minutes ago. I wanted to verify this. Did you say that increased radon in the house, there's been actual studies that it actually decreases your chances or you have a lower incidence of cancer? They're always talking about lung cancer with radon gas in the house.
Of course, that is part of the scam. This gentleman, this Bernard Cohen, I've heard him speak. He has studied all of this, and he found out that you had lower incidence of lung cancer if you had radon in the house. Bernard Cohen, C-O-H-E-N there, after the University of Pittsburgh. Absolutely. They're scaring you to death about a lot of things, and they're not scaring you to death about the things that you really should be scared about.
Is this essentially all that you're talking about? Basically, is it money and the making of money by medical institutions and pharmaceutical companies? Is this basically the motivating factor?
What are your thoughts, Dr. Kaufman?
Yes, that is the motivating factor. But when it's carried out most effectively, the practitioners believe that they're doing good by doing whatever they're doing.
And I think the doctors are really misled in this. And, of course, if you listen to my program regularly, you'll get the key to perhaps some of the other motivations behind this. Anything else, Regis, before we let you go?
Oh, no, that's it. Thank you very much for your show.
And I tell you what, it is incredible, but when you begin to check things out, these things are all in the literature by responsible people. And as I say, I've heard Dr. Cohen speak a number of times.
Can I ask one other question?
Sure, go ahead.
Are the omega-3s, whether it's flaxseed or fish oil, are they as beneficial as alternative medicine?
Dr. Kaufman?
The clinical trials and observational studies of fish and fish oil show that there is a really good benefit. There's a 20% reduction in those who have fish oil capsules or eat oily fish. 20% reduction in arrhythmias leading to sudden cardiac death. That's the main benefit compared with those who do not. Now, the benefits
We're going to have to break that off, but I hope that answers your question, Regis. Thanks so much for calling. And Dr. Kaufman, thank you so very much for being with us.
You are very welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, I hope you enjoyed our interview with Dr. Joel Kaufman, and his book is Malignant Medical Myths. If you're interested in it, why we can get that for you. Also, of course, we do carry Dr. Blaylock's wonderful book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. And if you know somebody getting cancer, you need to get natural strategies for cancer patients. If you'd like a book specifically on the statin drugs, we do carry one. It's called Statin Drugs, not that expensive. And it just shows you how they play with these statistics and pervert them. And just to confuse you, we have a 4-tape set, interviews with people on statin drugs. If you're interested in getting into fluoride and how they're poisoning our people, why we carry the book, The Fluoride Deception. We have a new video. It's called The Hidden Agenda, The Fluoride Deception. We have a syllabus that goes with that has all the scientific studies. It suppresses your sperm count and sperm mobility. And, of course, it's all about population control. there really is a population control agenda. Of course, it affects your mind. It lowers your intelligence. It increases the fragility of bones. It affects your endocrine system and your thyroid. And those are just a few of the things. It doubles the incidence of heart attack in communities that have fluoridated water. And then we wonder why we have so much more heart disease in the United States than in Great Britain, where they don't allow most of the water to be fluoridated. So we have all sorts of information on fluoridation, specifically the VHS, the hidden agenda, the fluoride deception, the DVD on water fluoridation. We have the book, The Fluoride Deception, and of course, we also offer, although you can get it off the internet, the report of the scientists and the lawyers and the engineers who work for the Environmental Protection Agency, who are trying to tell the American people we're being poisoned. You can go to their website, NTEU280.org, NTEU280.org, or if you want to buy that from us, we'll be glad to send it to you, but you can pull it down for nothing on the internet, and then get it to your doctor and ask him why he's advocating something that's poisoning the people when the people in the EPA is trying to get the truth out, and somebody's censoring it. You've got to get people to think. So remember our book on statins. Remember, of course, Dr. Blaylock's book. One of my favorites, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. If you haven't read The Miracle of Magnesium, you need to get that. That's Carolyn Dean's excellent book. And we're all magnesium deficient because we're just not getting magnesium out of plants as we should. And we do, incidentally, carry magnesium and a lot of other healthcare products. If you'd like one of our catalogs or you'd like to get the magnesium, I'll tell you what, I've sure been feeling a lot better since I've been taking it. And my heart's been a lot more regular, not skipping beats like it was before. We do carry the magnesium and we carry good products. All of our products are made by the leading producer of healthcare products in the United States, but they come out under our label. That's the RL products, but the prices are comparable. It helps Radio Liberty. Anything we can do, of course, to raise the funds to keep doing what we're doing. If you want to help us, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And you can order either the book by Dr. Kaufman. You can order Dr. Russell Blaylock's book. You can order the little book on statin drugs. You can order, of course, our 4-tape set on statin drugs. You can get some of my interviews with Dr. Blaylock on life-saving secrets, a 4-tape set. And we've already talked about the material on fluoride. Ladies and gentlemen, you're going to have to start looking after your own health because there's an organized effort to deceive the doctors. And they're telling you about these wonderful statistics, 30-40%, you know, less deaths. And really, it's about 0.5% in a lot of those cases, you know, 0.5% a year. But they just confuse the numbers. And, of course, that's well covered, certainly in Joel Kaufman's book, Malignant Medical Myths. Our telephone number again, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. You can listen 5 hours a day and then pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.